My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Have you ever questioned your self-worth? Were there events in your childhood, teen years, and early adult life that made you feel less worthy than others? Are you one of the millions of people who live their lives unfulfilled and unhappy because they are wired into thinking that they are unworthy of enjoying what is their actual birthright? Is there a way to turn this around, find self-worth and self-love, and live the life you deserve to live? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Anne Boudreau, says that you can turn this around, find your self-worth, and achieve sustainable happiness. She says the science of neuroplasticity is the key to making this happen. Anne Boudreau is an inspirational author, coach, and executive who was devoted to helping others develop healthy self-worth. Anne was born in Santiago, Chile, has lived in South America and Europe, traveled extensively, and is multilingual. She's a graduate of Northwestern University, earning degrees in English and writing. Through her broad exposure to many cultures, she has gained a profound understanding of the importance of spreading acceptance, compassion, respect, peace, and love, as these are the sacred qualities that will guide human beings to reconnect with one another and harmoniously unite into a global community. Anne lives in Atlanta with her husband, three spirited children, and three attention-hungry canines that rarely leave her side. She joins me this week to discuss her new book, A Human Mosaic: Heal, Renew, and Develop Self-Worth. Please welcome to Destination Unlimited, Anne Boudreau. Welcome, Anne.
Thank you for having me, Victor.
And thank you for joining us, because I believe what you're sharing is so important, especially in the world as it is today. So, Anne, please share about your path and how it led to your calling to help others.
Ever since I was a young girl, I mean, at the age of 5 and 6, I've been interested in the human mind and the brain and what yields human behavior. So as a young child, I shared with my father that I wanted to be a psychiatrist. And at that time, my father really didn't think much of the field of psychology or psychiatry. He felt it was a crutch for people. And I disagreed with him, so he went out and bought me a book. It was a very, very big book, I think 400, 500 pages, by David Viscott, called The Making of a Psychiatrist. And, of course, I was too young to understand the profound nature of what he was writing about. But I pretended to, in order to please my father, I pretended to read some of it. And it did not dissuade me from my really deep interest in human nature and human behavior. From that point, and I've always been a very intuitive and introspective person. So growing up through various traumatic events in my childhood, I absorbed everything in my world, as we all do, but I was hypersensitive. So I took everything that happened to me and really responded with a guarded and fractured sense of self. Long story short, after years and years of suffering from low self-worth myself, I decided to write about it. So that's really how I got to where I am today.
You were a successful marketing and communications executive. You would think that you had it all, but there was still something missing. Do you think this is common among those who have achieved success in their careers?
I do think it's common. In fact, during my nearly 7 years of research and interviewing people, I found that close to 86 to 88% of the people that I interviewed or interfaced with during my 21 years as a business executive suffered from low self-worth. Of course, the degrees of low self-worth or lack of self-value were different amongst different people with whom I worked. But long story short, it was a common theme in the business setting and in the world at large, which, as you know, has become exponentially more so with today's world that we live in.
And do you sense that women experience this more than men?
You know, I've thought about that before. Not necessarily. I think because women have the tendency to be more in tune with their emotions, or at least more aware of them and willing to express them, that yes, they are more apt to talk about it. But many, many men, in fact, every boss that I had growing up in the business world was a man, and every single one of them had issues with their self-worth. And it was obvious to me because of the way they led the companies. And, you know, for me, I loved the business world for a long time, but I realized through every position that I had that I wasn't fulfilled. And I wanted to do something more inspiring, more fulfilling, and more aligned with my true who I really was, who I really am today.
Let's talk a little bit more about these business leaders, these executives running these companies. How did their lack of self-worth manifest in their management style?
In so many different ways. I have many, many examples, but the most salient example that I have was I worked for a CEO. He hired me to be his director of corporate communications worldwide. So it was a fabulous position. It was almost scripted for me. And he brought me into his entourage, as they called it. And he was a pathological liar. He had a little black book. And if anyone said anything against him or that he did not agree with, he would blacklist those people. And I mean, there were so many examples of where he was critical and negative, and he ruled by fear and intimidation. And what happened was he ended up, you know, the most of the staff really did not support him or was not loyal to him, because when you treat your staff critically, negatively, you're not authentic or truthful with them. They're typically smart enough to see that, and you don't engender loyalty, and you certainly don't engender the best performance out of them.
And looking back at that experience with this person, did his lack of self-worth result in his using this negativity, the lying, the manipulation to mask those feelings?
Absolutely. I would have conversations with my colleagues and they'd say, oh, isn't he the most arrogant person you've ever met? I said, he appears to be arrogant, but that's just his facade. What is driving him to be the way he is his tremendous insecurity, his fear of not being right all the time, his fear of not achieving enough, or his insecurity was, he wore it on his sleeve, but people thought it was arrogance, but it was actually not arrogance, it was insecurity that drove him to be. And he's the classic textbook case of narcissism, which we have currently in our world. We have the U.S. leader who also has that very similar. He reminds me of my old boss, only on a much powerful level. What happens with people, especially in positions of power, when sometimes their low self-worth is what actually drives them and motivates them to be successful. But on the other hand, it also disallows them from being kind and supportive and caring, because they're always walking around with distrust and low self-value. And so it's projected through their behavior and through the way they treat people in a negative and critical way.
You know, it's interesting that I found that I've known many business leaders and businessmen, and the ones who manifest what we're talking about will often feign compassion in order to mask what they're actually experiencing.
Yes, I think you're right. But any intuitive person can tell you that that is not authentic. It's not genuine. They convey compassion, but their actions speak louder than their words.
You've traveled throughout Europe and South America, and of course the United States. Is this an issue that you've seen manifest in different countries and in different people around the world?
It's a common issue. I mean, self-worth has no ethnic, socioeconomic, gender, sexual cultural, religious, political boundaries. It is part of every single human being.
And in any culture, it can manifest.
Absolutely, any culture. And in some cultures, particularly cultures that are extreme and still treat women poorly and are in more uncivilized countries, they live with tremendous fear. But, you know, in America, we have a huge culture of low self-worth because of the fact that back then our parents didn't know about self-worth. I wasn't raised with parents who really understood self-worth. They were more focused on my behavior, my external accomplishments. They never asked me how I felt about myself internally. What did I value my life? It just wasn't something that was done back then.
My guest is Anne Boudreau. She's the author of A Human Mosaic, Heal, Renew, and Develop Self-Worth. And we'll be back with more of Anne after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Tune in to The Practical Intuitive, Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World, with me, host Robin Fritz, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. I'll cover personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice, and more, all to help you tap your own intuitive and healing skills. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Jill, why don't you tell the class what you did this weekend?
Well, my dad and I went in search of some magical minnows and found a zillion of them in the stream from our lookout rock. Then my sister and I escaped from an evil slug king and went back to my super twig fort for safety. Then we told stories till it got dark and the Big Dipper led us all the way home.
Wow. Where were you, Jill?
We went to the forest. It's not that far away.
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with, all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up, like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and theshelterpetproject.org.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is Anne Boudreau. She's the author of A Human Mosaic, Heal, Renew, and Develop Self-Worth. And prior to the break, we were talking about your travels and if you had witnessed in any countries cultural differences, the lack of self-worth. Are there any countries in which that was lessened or that there was more self-worth?
I think that it's hard to dissect it down, but I do think that in some countries, family is so important in the Asian culture, in the Latin culture, and in countries like Sweden, Norway, Denmark, they value people above all else. And so I think that from the standpoint of as a child or a baby evolves through developmental phases, there are cultures that are more in tune with what will help a child be stable and solid and not feel defensive or insecure. But it's an issue, you know. The thing is, it's an individual issue because each person is unique. There is no person that is like any other in the world, as we know. And because of this, we each interpret things that happen in our world differently. Because I'm so sensitive, I tended to take everything personally, and it was a result of a traumatic instance. When I was 8, I was bullied by two girls very, very harshly and severely, and it shattered any self-worth I had. And then it went on. It happened at a sleepaway camp for 2 weeks, And then it went on into the school year. And at that point, bullying wasn't an issue that was discussed. It was something that you kind of put under the rug. And so my parents never addressed it with me. No one ever addressed it with me. So I had to live with those thoughts that those girls implanted in me. They rejected me. They were heinous towards me. And they turned everyone against me. So I ended up not, I didn't understand that it was their insecurity that propagated their bullying. What I believed was there was something wrong with me, that I had done something or said something, and that from that point on, I was extremely distrusting and suspicious. And I made it my life's work to seek acceptance from everybody and do the best I could so that nobody would reject me ever again. So to answer your question, there are cultures, I think, that do a nicer job with raising their kids just from the standpoint of the family unit and believing. But I think it's a problem that's, as I said earlier, across all borders, ages, socioeconomic backgrounds. It's just a matter of whether it's handled or not handled. And, you know, parents today really need to take an active role in their child's lives, especially today with all the social media stuff that is just creating such a weapon for people. And suicides and bullying has increased exponentially because of misuse and abuse of social media.
You mentioned that in your case, it was bullying that led to your issues and challenges. What are the other genesis of low self-worth? And is it different for different people?
It is. As I mentioned earlier, because of our unique nature, our unique genetic composition and our environmental factors, we each interpret how we are treated or what we experience differently. Some people are just able to just take stuff. And I mean, my husband's a great example of someone who just never takes anything personally. He's very comfortable in his own skin. From the moment infant, even in the womb, it's been shown through studies that a fetus and an infant starts to develop emotions and feelings as it exposed to noises and this kind of thing. But once an infant is born, they're not born with high self-worth or low self-worth. They really have no self-worth. So the moment they enter the world, though, their brain, which is at highest capacity for absorbing everything, starts to interpret experiences. And if a baby is left unfed, untended to, in a dirty diaper, their self-worth will begin to form, and they'll begin to feel a lack of trust, which profoundly impacts one's self-worth. And if a mother is breastfeeding and not looking into the eyes of her infant, rather she's looking at her phone, that will also send a message to the infant that my mother's not connecting with me, so my neurons aren't firing at the level that they should be. And the brain, the infant's brain, is so fertile that it's taking everything in. And it's very important for parents to understand that early on is really when it's important to focus on helping a child cultivate a inner sense of who they are and learn to trust themselves so that they can trust others.
What was the old expression I remember growing up in the 50s and 60s? They used to say that if you don't stroke the baby's back, the spine shrinks or something to that effect. Do you recall anything like that? I'm trying to remember the exact quotation, but...
I don't know that one, but I do know that, in all the years of research that I did and interviewing people, that I know that children who have been ignored or abused, they end up growing up with such a poor self-belief, a poor self-conception of who they are, that they're more prone to inflict damage on others and not be a functional part of society. It is just so important as a parent to be able to speak to your child and not focus on what they do externally, but focus on how they feel internally.
Mm. In your book, A Human Mosaic, you make a clear distinction between self-esteem and self-worth. Please explain that.
Yes, most people use the terms interchangeably, and you probably know, Victor, that you hear self-esteem all the time. When I first started working on my book and researching, it didn't take me long to realize that what I lacked my entire life up till I was in my early 40s was low self-worth, because I was a very high achiever and I did well in every job because I didn't want to disappoint anyone. I didn't want to be rejected. I wanted to be the best I could be in everything. But so the difference is they are actually opposite terms of one another. Self-esteem is one's confidence in their competence. That is what you do in the world. You can be a brilliant chef or a plumber or a teacher or a painter and be really great at what you do, but suffer from low self-worth. They're very different. Self-worth has to do with how you value your innermost self, how worthy you believe you are, the value you place on your life. And they're very different. A person can be hugely successful and still suffer from low self-worth. And in my book, I give the example of Michael Phelps, and there's so many others, you know, that have accomplished so much in their life from an external point of view, but inside they are suffering. And it's not easy to, I mean, a lot of people, you would never know. I had a friend from boarding school who was the jokester and always funny and smiling and making other people laugh. And, you know, everyone thought he was just always happy on the outside. And he was miserable and just recently committed suicide, and no one had any idea, not even his very closest friends. So they're very different. And he was very successful. He was CEO of an eco-friendly kind of company that does, they do cars, they develop cars with eco-friendly gases and that stuff. But it is much more common than people realize. And it has such a weight on their life. Low self-worth affects every aspect of a person's life. I call it, it's the nucleus of a person, or the heartbeat of a person. And it's the lens by which you view your entire life. Every aspect of a person's life is affected by low self-worth. Their relationships, their attitude, their energy, productivity, immune system, and especially how a person heals from illness, one's sleep patterns, their sexuality, all they do in their life is filtered by this lens of low self-worth. And it really, people can live their entire life. I gave a speech out of the country, and a 90-year-old man who attended turned to me at the end of the speech and said, "Okay, I'm 90, and I just realized what's been plaguing me all these years." And it was this feeling of low self-value.
And how does low self-worth affect the relationships that we engage in?
It has a huge impact on our relationships, because when one has low self-worth, they don't feel self-acceptance. They don't feel typically self-love or self-understanding or self-compassion, and or, of course, self-trust. And when you don't trust yourself, and you don't feel compassion for yourself, it is very difficult to trust others. And you carry that negative, it's that critical, what I call the critical voice that keeps recycling in your brain and taking situations and interpreting them in a totally different way from what they might be. Some of the people I interviewed were in heavily abusive relationships. One woman had been abused by her husband for 11 years. Used to take a 10-pound sack of potatoes and beat her up with it.
Oh, my God.
She could not leave him because her self-worth was so low. She didn't think anyone would ever love her, so she resorted to just taking it. And finally, one day, he beat her to a pulp, and her son came in and said, you can't do this anymore, Mom. You've got to get out of here. And she left, and she's been working on herself ever since. It impacts every aspect of your life.
My guest this week on Destination Unlimited is Anne Boudreau. She's the author of A Human Mosaic, Heal, Renew, and Develop Self-Worth. Anne, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your work.
My book is available through my website. My website is A-N-N-E, middle initial O, last name Boudreau, Boudreau.com. It is also online on Amazon, as well as Barnes & Noble. And I'm a very interactive person. I love to hear from my readers, and I welcome any comments any time of the week, and I provide feedback.
And we'll be back with more of Anne and her human mosaic after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
This is OTR-FM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
As humans, we ask ourselves all kinds of questions. But what if we were forced to ask ourselves a question every day that affected the outcome of the most basic things, the most important things in our lives? The question is, what is your sexual orientation or gender identity? And the answer is the difference between keeping your job or getting fired. The answer is the difference between staying in your home or getting evicted. The answer is the difference between receiving medical treatment or not. Because in 30 states, it's legal to discriminate against people based on their answer to this question. LGBT Americans have the right to say, "I do," but they don't have the same basic rights as everyone else. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Kelly Fox, host and astrologer of The Astrology Show. Each week, I'll give you access to the current transits, which are a valuable tool that provide astrological information to help unlock the potential each of us has. Understanding the stars can help steer us in the right direction to make better informed choices. So if you're wondering what's going to happen in your week ahead, be sure to tune in to The Astrology Show for guidance. Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Teens in foster care will love you, even if you don't know the lingo.
Dad bod, noun. The result of the occasional donut always washed down with confidence.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is Anne Boudreau. She's the author of A Human Mosaic, Heal, Renew, and Develop Self-Worth. And before the break, you had mentioned the tragedy of the friend of yours who had committed suicide. And in recent years, we've witnessed successful people, especially celebrities and stars, that have chosen to end their lives by suicide. What is the mechanism that drives someone who seems to have it all to this tragic end?
You know, that was a question that has arisen in so many different conversations. People view other people that seem to, quote, unquote, have it all and say, how could they do that? They have money and fame and this and that. What people don't realize is that no amount of external achievement, of external recognition, of celebrity status is ever, or money, financial gain, is ever enough to fill the void of low self-worth. And you look at the people, Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain, who was really at the height, pinnacle of his career in journalism.
And one of my personal heroes. I was so, so devastated when that happened.
Oh, and Robin Williams, who, you know, gave up at a time when Parkinson's was just now being studied, you know, and many, many more. Because they cannot seem to reconcile how they feel. No one understands that people who are prone to being suicidal, their depth of loneliness and disconnectedness and lack of health mentally and emotionally is so deep and so profound that they can't see beyond their own nose. They really feel, my brother-in-law, my husband's brother, committed suicide several years ago, and he had been suffering from depression all along. They always said it was just chemical with him. But I've always explained to people that it's never just chemical, because the chemical can be adjusted with medicine. But it's always this composite of issues that affect someone who is severely depressed. And he ended up taking his life. And he said that when he felt that there was no hope, that's when he decided it was time. He had lost interest in everything. And I heard so many people say how selfish it was. And people always want to say how selfish it is. But unless you have been to the point where you are suicidal, it's very hard to understand that depth of pain, of inner just feelings, these wounds that overtake you. There's always been suicides, but I think now, because we know everything at a moment's notice through the communication channels, that people find that suicide is often their only escape to their pain. And that's just so unfortunate. I mean, if you look at these people, they did have fame and fortune, but that wasn't enough for them. They still didn't feel fulfilled. And unfortunately, if your lack of self-worth is never addressed, you can live your life feeling unworthy and unlovable. It's worse than a disease, really.
In A Human Mosaic, you say that we can reverse low self-worth through the relatively new science of neuroplasticity. What is neuroplasticity and how does it work?
Neuroplasticity, the term was developed years and years ago, 1960s, I believe, even before then. But the term neuroplasticity refers to our brain being plastic or malleable. And for years and years and years, we thought our brain was hardwired by the time we were 25. And that is that we wouldn't have the ability to create new neurons or change ourselves because our brain couldn't adapt. But now we know through the science of neuroplasticity and neurogenesis that our brain can change structurally through learning new thoughts and new behavior. We can create new neural pathways. With each new thought, we create a new neural pathway. And as you focus more on that thought and that emotion, you have the ability to create this new neural pathway that leads to short-term and long-term change. So neuroplasticity is like when you build muscle, the muscle has to be trained and programmed and worked on. You can't just let it linger. And the research has shown that when we do not pay attention to certain things that we need to, those brain cells start to shut down and that ability fades away with time. So it's very important and the beauty of neuroplasticity is that at any age or stage of life, you can change yourself. And that, for me, was kind of the jewel, the diamond in the rough, so to speak, because so many people get frustrated that they cannot change. They can't lose weight. They can't become more patient. They don't have enough energy. Whatever it is, even addictive personalities. The truth is that anyone can change if they're willing to put the time and effort into it and really commit to doing it. It's amazing. It's probably my favorite discovery during this process was learning about the power of neuroplasticity. And neurogenesis, which is another area of study, is our brain's capacity to actually develop new neurons, which is remarkable. So if you learn a new language, for instance, or learn to play a new instrument, or take up bridge, let's say, you are sharpening your brain and your brain is actually creating new neurons, which is remarkable, especially for in instances of trauma. Neuroplasticity has been researched in brains that have suffered from trauma and has shown that you can rebuild those neurons by the power of neuroplasticity.
Can memory also be improved?
Absolutely. I mean, trauma, if you look at post-traumatic stress syndrome patients, their memory of the trauma is so lucid that they continue to suffer that post-traumatic stress disorder because the trauma is stored. But on the positive, you can replace that traumatic memory with more positive memories. And at any time, by learning a new language, as I said, or learning a new skill, you can improve your memory. But it has to be honed. It's like everything else. If you let it lag, it's going to eventually diminish. But you can improve your memory to a certain degree.
So it's just a question of exercising the brain as well as exercising the muscles.
That's exactly right.
Why, in your experience, are most people resistant to or afraid of change in their lives?
Well, you know, Victor, people fear change. It's the unknown. That's the number one reason. And that beautiful woman that was being beaten by her husband and suffered violent, violent abuse. She knew her home. She had a child. She, you know, grappled with it all the time. But she felt like the discomfort in what her circumstances was more tolerable than a change, than leaving, that she'd have to be alone raising a child. I think that the issue is that people fear change. And the other issue is that I found amongst many, many people that I interviewed, they didn't believe they could change. They thought all dogs can't learn new tricks. And they had failed in the past because they hadn't, the change they made, they were either coerced to change by some external, by a person or some love interest or something, wanted you to lose weight or change, or you felt you should be a certain way. And those external reasons will not yield sustainable change. Change, sustainable change, whether it's thought, attitudinal, or behavioral change, has to stem from within. It has to be connected with your innermost self. And when you are disjointed from your innermost self, your behavior, your focus is external versus internal. No change can last because you're doing it for the wrong reasons.
You say that self-reflection is an important preparation for change. Please share one of the self-reflection techniques that you offer in A Human Mosaic.
Self-reflection is important for every single human being. And many of the people that I interviewed that had suffered from trauma did not want to do any self-reflection because they feared reliving the experience again. And the truth is that proper self-reflection does not require a person to relive that experience. In fact, it's just the opposite. You don't want to relive the experience. But what it does is it allows you to learn from your experience. So it's a very profound process that allows you to step back from something that caused you discomfort or duress or stress, negativity, hurt, whatever it was. It allows you to step away from it and give you perspective on what happened and develop a new understanding of what actually happened. You know, I always have said this in the past, distance is a brilliant window to understanding. When you're able to get some space and some distance from something that happened to you, you can learn more about yourself. It's a great opportunity for self-discovery and self-understanding. And when you derive information about yourself through self-reflection, you can really obtain valuable knowledge about what those past events, the impact that they had on your life. And it's different from reliving the experience because you are in a comfortable setting. And you're able to write down one of the exercises, as you asked, of self-reflection. I believe strongly in journaling. I was able to do a lot of my healing through writing about what I went through. And being able to see it in writing not only gave it the credibility that it was a big thorn inside of me for years and years and years, but I was able to analyze it from a different perspective. I was detaching from it to some degree. Just putting it on the paper was huge in terms of taking it from my brain and transferring onto the paper. Also, I talk about in my book, I talk about meditation and breathing techniques that enable you to reflect on things because you're going at it from a calm, detached standpoint. You're not in the fire. You're looking back at the fire and you're able to see what caused the fire and what you can do in the future to avoid that fire or to be able to squelch that fire before it even erupts.
And we'll be back with more of Anne Boudreau and A Human Mosaic, Heal, Renew, and Develop Self-Worth after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
Thoughts of suicide may feel impossible to overcome, but with help and support, you can find hope and meaning. Call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK to speak to a counselor, or visit suicidepreventionlifeline.org. It's free, it's confidential, it's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And even if it feels like it, you're not alone.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
Looking for inspiration?
Want to be inspired?
Not sure where to go?
Find Mark and Kim every Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern on Inspired Living.
Topics will elevate consciousness and range from metaphysics to the human and social experience and all things spiritual.
Welcome to an inspired community that offers support, encouragement, and new ways of thinking. You are the inspired and the inspiration.
What does Meals on Wheels do? They deliver meals and smiles to homebound seniors. But Meals on Wheels does something else. They turn a volunteer's lunch break into a meaningful experience.
As small and as simple as a relationship is between a volunteer and a client of Meals on Wheels, it's really so impactful. I never thought that 5 minutes could make so much difference in the lives of two people, but it has.
Drop off a warm meal and get more than you expect. Volunteer at AmericaLet'sDoLunch.org. That's AmericaLet'sDoLunch.org. Brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
Change and growth are part of natural life, and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is Anne Boudreaux. She's talking about her book, A Human Mosaic, Heal, Renew, and Develop Self-Worth. And before the break, you were talking about self-reflection techniques. Please continue.
Yeah, I was discussing why self-reflection is a really huge part of transformative behavioral change or developing what I call healthy self-worth. It's so important to ruminate over experiences because when you are writing or even recording what you experienced in the past and paying attention to it, you can actually, you know, very easily see or understand what may have triggered that situation or that emotion. And learning how to listen for cues and triggers is a huge part of transformation. Because when you feel yourself starting to go down that same negative familiar path of self-criticism or self-flagellation, you can actually stop yourself before you fall, as I say, because you're listening for these cues and you start to recognize them, whether it's a song or a person or some. For me, it was always the tone of someone's. If somebody was critical towards me, I always viewed it as rejection. So even if they were imparting knowledge and they were in a bad mood and I interpreted it as being negative towards me, I got very defensive and angry and upset and I couldn't let go of it. And I realized that that was something that I worked hard on in my period of self-reflection. I worked hard to understand what those specific triggers were or cues. They're really the same thing that elicited that behavior in me that was really damaging to myself. A big point to understand is that it's much easier. People don't like to change because they feel it's easier to remain the same, that it takes too much effort to change. But what we suppress, what we push down inside of us, it never disappears. And it's always in there. And until you are able to, through self-reflection, figure out what the root causes of your insecurities or your fears or your resentment are, they're going to continue to recycle in you and really take away and steal beautiful moments of your life. So I think it's very important to spend that time understanding yourself and being able to recognize what it is that may have fueled that situation and what to look for in the future. It's akin to having, I think the people that are able to change have what's called a growth mindset. They believe that they can learn and evolve and improve through repetition and through better self-understanding.
In your book, you share many examples of how neuroplasticity has been used to turn this around. Can you give us one example, please?
When you start to go through this process of self-awareness and learning more about yourself and what took place that has caused you to have a poor self-concept, what you can do is you can start, once you let this out and you spend time in self-reflection, you can start to replace those negative thoughts with positive thoughts. And the more you imbue positive, inspirational, motivational thoughts and emotions into your brain, the new pathways that develop through neuroplasticity will allow you to diminish those critical thoughts and in time, even not erase them, but supplant them through new behavior, new thoughts, new attitudes. It's amazing. And, you know, I'm living proof of someone who suffered for years and years and years to an extreme, and no one knew it because I carried it. I was a master at concealing my insecurity. I performed on the stage of life very well in school and in business and in relationships. But internally, I had what's known as cognitive dissonance. My external behavior was in discord with how I felt about myself. And so I retrained my brain to really grow to love myself and accept myself no matter what. Even if I did something that didn't turn out the way I wanted to, like gave a speech or, you know, gave a radio interview with Victor Furman and it didn't turn out the way I'd hoped it had, I don't beat myself up over it anymore. I just say, okay, next time I'll learn from that experience and I'll do better. So it's a matter of desire and passion. Do you want to live a life of meaning? And do you want to be fulfilled? Or do you want to continue to self-punish yourself and live with self-doubt? And once you make that commitment and decision, it just takes time and effort and willingness. But anyone can change themselves.
What may each of us do to help instill self-worth in others?
Oh, that's a loaded question because the world is just, I've never seen it in such disarray, really. I mean, the irrational violence and bullying and negativity and the rise in bigotry is really startling and unacceptable, frankly. But it first starts with you. You know, one of the things that, like my boss and your boss, Victor, they didn't have self-love. They weren't their own biggest fan. And so that negative emotion with them projected outwardly and to others. And so loving yourself and accepting yourself and trusting yourself and respecting yourself is key to reaching out to others with compassion. And it's so important for each one of us to develop healthy self-worth so that we can heal the world. I mean, my mission is to help people learn to really like themselves and accept themselves unconditionally so that they can spread that positive energy into the universe.
We talked about children before. How may parents avoid negative conditioning and instill self-worth in their children?
It's very difficult for parents. I mean, as I referred to earlier in our interview, back when I was being raised, self-worth wasn't even a topic of discussion. I mean, nobody even knew what it was. And parents really did focus on achievement and comparing one kid to another type thing. Now I think parents are equipped with much better information, but they themselves might suffer from self-worth. And it's very difficult because you start projecting onto your children things that you feel about yourself. And so understanding as a parent, understanding what you've experienced and being able to step away from that and be a good role model for your kids, applauding your kids, whether they do well or not, and not forcing your expectations on there. I mean, I have three children and each one could not be more different. And I really allowed them to be who they are and evolve the way they are meant to evolve without setting expectations and being disappointed if they don't. And today's world, you've got these helicopter parents. And you know, recently in the news, Victor, that these parents paid to have their kids, they essentially cheated to get their kids into colleges by paying someone off to help them rig the tests and all of that. I mean, what a horrible example of low self-worth and of poor parenting is that. I mean, these parents were essentially saying that I'm going to pay for my kid because I don't have confidence in them that they can do it themselves. Imagine living with that for the rest of your life.
Horrible message.
It's a horrible message. And so you need to love your child, not for what they do, but for who they are. And I've spent years teaching my children to describe other people by their character, by whether they're witty, creative, are they, talented skier or musician, not by what they look like. Because that when someone dies, you don't remember them for what they look like. You remember them for their character. And a parent needs to recognize that in this terrible world right now that we're living in, you've got to teach children to have the inner strength and inner faith in themselves so that they won't be broken when something happens outside of themselves. I mean, with all the bullying and turmoil, it's very easy to lose your footing. But with healthy or positive self-worth, somebody can rip you to tears and you literally can say, that's their issue, that's not mine.
What is the significance of your book's title?
I spent a long time. The first title I chose for my book was Core Confidence, Retrain Your Brain. And then another one I had was Your Life Matters, because that's really the essence of learning self-worth, is to know that you matter, that you have meaning in this world, that you were born for a reason. I mean, when you think of the chances of a child being born, they're very few and far between. So I came down to trying to think of something that was very emblematic of our human experience. And it ended up to be a mosaic, because we are each so multifaceted. Each one of us is different. We are different sizes, shapes, colors. We come from different backgrounds. But as we evolve through life, we start to come together, and our energy, even though our energy is always changing and reforming and forming in a new way, we become this mosaic, beautiful mosaic of all our experiences. And by building or developing healthy self-worth, positive self-worth, you start to feel that you are becoming the best version of yourself. What does the best version of yourself mean? It means that you're open to experience, good or bad. It means that you have the resilience to, even when someone you love to the ends of the universe dies, you know that you have the resilience to survive and regain your footing, that you don't need external accolades to feel that you matter, or that you're a better person because you're valued by people, because you value yourself. So I called it a human mosaic because I felt that it was really the process of becoming in tune with your soul self, aligned with your soul self, so that you can feel that you're living an authentic life. And I always lived with one foot in, one foot out. It wasn't until I released all that negativity and replaced it with positive, joyful thoughts that I realized that I was becoming a more evolved person. And I continue. It's a continual growth pattern for me.
As it is for each and every one of us. My guest, Ann Boudreau, she's the author of A Human Mosaic, Heal, Renew, and Develop Self-Worth. And one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you.
My book is available through my website, which is www.anneoboudreau.com, or online at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And my email is on my website, and I'm always open to interaction from readers, and I love to hear feedback, no matter what it is.
And thank you so much for joining us. Your message and your book are so important, especially in the world the way it is today. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Victor, for taking the time. It's been an honor to talk to you.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.